This is Mary Lewis at A Tiny Homestead, the podcast comprised entirely of conversations with homesteaders, cottage food producers, and crafters. Today I'm talking with Betsy at Summerhill Farm. Good morning, Betsy. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. Sunshine and bright here in Minnesota. I don't know what it's doing in Ohio.
Same thing in Ohio. We'll take it.
Yeah, no doubt. We just had a whole bunch of cloudy, sort of snowy weather for about 3.5 days straight. So I'm real happy to have the sunshine pouring through my window. Tell me about yourself and Summerhill Farm.
There is so much to tell.
I'm good with that.
Okay, well, we have lived on this farm for 42 years and raised a lot of sheep and 3 children. And now we have 6 grandchildren, but they all grew up and left the farm. So we started with 3 generations. My in-laws were also here. It's a family farm. So 3 generations of us farmed and raised sheep for a lot of years. And the older generation has passed away and the younger generation has moved on, and so now we're just the middle generation left. It's been a great life, a great way to raise kids, and we love it. So we are navigating what a lot of people our age, we're in our, getting to be our upper 60s, and trying to figure out, you know, how to keep doing what we've been doing, but scale back a little. The labor shortage is a big factor, but we want to stay. So we're gradually transitioning to fewer livestock and fewer hours of ours spent doing the field work. So we're contracting to neighbors. And then we're trying to focus a little more on agritourism, because our farm is just beautiful. It's on a hilltop that looks west, so we have amazing sunsets. And actually, the whole farm is on a hillside, and it's the highest point of the county that we live in. So it's, you know, we enjoy living here every day. Anyway, so yeah, our big event coming up is the total solar eclipse. We're in the path of totality. We've been talking about it for like 3 years. How do we share our view with other people on this amazing day? So we'll see. We only have a week and a half until the event.
And the solar eclipse is April 8th, is that right?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, we can't. I don't think we're going to be able to see a whole lot of it here. I mean, I'm assuming the sky will get darker, but I don't think it'll be completely dark because we're not in that path.
Right. Yeah, we've watched partial eclipses and thought they were pretty cool, but from everything we're hearing, a total eclipse is just a completely different thing.
Yeah. So what are you doing for your event? What in particular are you doing?
Well, I also on our farm have had a home bakery, and I do catering, and I've been doing that since my kids were little. And so I am catering a lunch. The eclipse is at 3 p.m, and they tell us that the roads get all jammed up and people are coming from every direction to the area. So we're encouraging people to come here and set up, bring sleeping bags or blankets or lawn chairs and find a spot where they want to hang out and watch. From beginning to end is like almost 2 hours. So you can watch the beginning, you know, starting at 2 o'clock. So I'm catering a lunch from 12 to 2. And then hopefully at 2, everyone will get in place and get ready to watch.
What are you making? Because I might have to make a trip.
You should come. Well, I wanted a menu that seemed fitting. Mm-hmm. So I'm doing black bean chili. We have a lot of vegetarians. And with toppings. So I'm just envisioning this compostable white bowl with a black hole in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And then toppings of grated cheese and sweet corn and chopped red peppers that you can, you know, put around the edge so it will look like an eclipse.
That's gorgeous. I can just
I'm hoping.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then brilliant. Corn muffins and of course eclipse cookies, which are, you know, chocolate with vanilla cream.
Mm-hmm.
Not exactly moon pies, but my own take.
Fun.
And then veggies and fruit and yeah.
Yep, I would have to skip the chili because I'm assuming you're not holding back on chili powder for this one.
Oh, well, you have to have chili powder.
Yeah, I can't. I have an allergy to capsaicin. My lips go numb. They get cold. My throat tightens up. And I haven't pushed it, but I'm assuming I would stop breathing if I ate too much of it. So I just don't do any of it.
Wow.
I love corn muffins and I love fruit and I love veggies. Yeah. So I would eat if I came. It would be fine.
Yeah. Well, I am ending up doing a meat lovers version 2 that will have no beans in it, but, and I won't make them spicy. I'll have hot sauce on the side for people who really want their pepper.
Yep.
But you have to have some chili powder spice.
I wish I could still do it. I tried making chili a week or so ago. And I just used a lot of cumin because cumin also is part of the flavor of chili. Mm-hmm. And I used smoked paprika because smoked paprika doesn't kick that allergy off.
Good.
And it was okay. It wasn't chili. Unfortunately, it didn't hit that button for me. But it was edible. It was definitely okay.
You just have to give it a different name.
Yep. And I made cornbread to go with it. So at least I got the cornbread hit. So that was good.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's amazing how much people have to, I don't know, corrupt recipes to get to what they need and what won't kill them to eat. So anyway, okay, so that sounds like a really fun event. Have you got like an RSVP count or is it just people are going to show up?
I'm really begging people to let me know if they're coming. Mm-hmm. I've got a lot of confirmations vocally. And as far as reservations, I have a small number, you know, like 40. I'm hoping for
100. 40 is not a small number, ma'am.
Well, I'm hoping for 100.
Nice.
Yeah, we have Airbnb rentals too. So one of the things that we did on our farm as people left and we have houses that are not lived in, we've put them on Airbnb. Mm-hmm. So we have a restored log cabin that sleeps 4. And then we have the big original farmhouse that was built in the early 1800s. And that is just a beautiful house my in-laws lived in. Mm-hmm. And so we have that on Airbnb and that sleeps 11. So those spaces are all booked. Plus,
nice.
The houses, my sister-in-law lives next door and we put up a lot of people in our houses. So
your place sounds like a dream. It really does.
Well, you'll have to look at the website. Have you looked?
I did look because I do my homework and it is a dream. It's really pretty.
We love it. We feel like we live in heaven. We're just happy every day looking around. And you know, I grew up in the city. So, I mean, in a neighborhood, Lansing, Michigan. So I always dreamed of living on a farm as a child. And then when I met my husband, it was both of us had that dream. So we made it happen.
It's helpful when the husband has the same dreams as you do. It's really helpful.
Well, I think that's why we got married, because I think we knew that we had the same dreams, the same goals.
Yeah, I think that's great. So what else do you guys do at the farm? I mean, you have the
we
Airbnb.
Have sheep.
You have sheep, okay.
Right. So yeah, the sheep, raising sheep has been the main thing. We've always had some other critters around. You know, we've raised chickens and turkeys, and we have a guard dog. We used to breed Great Pyrenees guard dogs.
Uh-huh.
When you raise sheep, you need a way to protect them from predators and coyotes and wild dogs are the big thing. So when we started raising sheep, we started also raising guard dogs. So Great Pyrenees for many, many years. And then when the kids grew up and left, we didn't have anyone to brush them out. Great Pyrenees have very long fur.
Yes.
So we got a llama, which can be used for guarding in a way. Mm-hmm. They're not the same as a dog, but and then we got an Anatolian Shepherd, and she's a great guard dog that doesn't have to be brushed out. She's got a shorter, dense fur, you know, coat.
Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know they had a shorter coat than a Great Pyrenees.
Yeah, they're not a very well-known dog. But anyway, we love her. Nellie is a wonderful guard dog. And then we have a border collie for herding the sheep.
Mm-hmm.
And that's mostly, yeah. And as far as crop production, we just have pasture and hay. So we're grass-based. We focus on keeping the sheep outside, and we have portable fencing. So we move them around. It's 160 acres.
Wow.
And
that's
we
awesome.
Move them around. Yeah.
That's a lot of land there.
I
would say I'm jealous, but I'm not. Our 3 acres is just enough to keep us happy and busy. 3 acres is good. But
when you're 3 acres. Yeah,
when you're dealing with livestock and hay and that kind of stuff, it's good to have a lot of acres because they need to be able to get out and do their thing. So for a while there, you had puppies and lambs quite often, yes?
We lambed 5 times a year. Mm-hmm. For many years, it was a program that Cornell promoted, and the breed of sheep we raise can lamb out of season, which your traditional sheep farmers lamb just in the spring once a year. Mm-hmm. And this breed is called Polypay. It was developed out west as a breed that, you know, gives you something to sell all year round. So when you have different groups lambing 5 different times during the year, you always have a supply to sell.
Okay, so basically you would stagger the breedings for the sheep and then have a batch of lambs every 3 months, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, that's what we used to do, right?
Yeah, okay.
But cool. Then when the kids grew up and we had less labor, we cut back to 3 and then gradually 2, and now we only lamb in the fall.
Okay.
And finding a breed of sheep. So we've been working on the genetics for 40 years to keep the ewes who will breed out of season and sell the ewes that don't. So in September, October this past year, we had 150 lambs born. And so now those are ready to market, and then the ewes are ready to breed back.
Yep, that was going to be my next question: are they for meat? Are they for wool? Are they for both?
Wool doesn't bring any money in this country unless you're raising just very specific breeds that have very fine wool, merinos.
Okay.
And yeah, the wool market in this country is trashed. We actually just formed a wool cooperative to find alternative uses for wool.
Huh.
Because only just the finest, finest wool. And, you know, those sheep farmers, they put coats on the sheep. And yeah, it's very specialized. And so anyway, we don't raise them for the wool.
Okay.
Wool is the problem. But okay. you have to shear them for them to breed back.
Okay.
And to keep them healthy, you have to shear them at least once a year.
And so what do you end up doing with the wool? Do you just throw away?
We had a wool cooperative in our area that purchased the wool, and then they marketed it for us. So they would grade it and sell it for different uses. It for things like socks and I don't know, ours is a medium grade wool. Mm-hmm. But the cooperative just went under. So now we have no one in Ohio to buy it from us. And so now our shearer is transporting it to Indiana to a cooperative. And we're not getting even close to what we have to pay to get them shorn. So we're actually working with some Ohio State University scientists on using wool for horticultural uses. So seed mats, seed starting, and also as an additive in potting mixes. So potting mix has some non-renewable things that are traditionally used, like peat and vermiculite and perlite. And if we could use wool, which is completely renewable, we have too much wool, as an additive that would give, you know, similar like water holding capacity, aerating the mix. So that's what we're working on, but we don't have, we're just beginning, and a lot of data and studies need to be done to look at it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Again, you have cemented my absolute joy in starting this podcast because I just learned something I did not know about. I had no idea there was no market for wool in the States.
So I'll tell you what we are marketing, since that's just a side of product.
Yep.
So we are selling meat sheep, but basically we're selling genetics. So we've been breeding and tracking the genetics of our sheep. We do DNA testing and we look for particular characteristics that meat growers want. So we sell rams and ewes for breeding stock for big producers who produce a lot of meat. Mostly for here in Ohio, we're focused on the markets on the East Coast. So a lot of the meat lambs are sold in New York City and to ethnic groups. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. I kind of wish that more grocery stores sold lamb.
Yeah.
We really love lamb here. I've mentioned it before. I'm not going to get too deep into it, but lamb is a wonderful meat for taking any seasoning you cook it with and absorbing it, and it just turns out great every time. I really like cooking lamb.
I do
The problem is I can't get my hands on it very often because the grocery stores don't really sell it around here. And when we can get our hands on lamb, it's typically an actual lamb, you know, like the entire animal, and we butcher it ourselves and freeze the meat and use it over the course of the year. I have not had the chance to do that in probably 6-7 years now. So when we do have access to lamb, whether we get a rack of lamb or whether we get the leg of lamb or however we acquire it, it's a treat around here. We really take the time to think about how we want to prepare it and what we want to eat with it because it's an event. It's not based around Christmas or Easter or anything. It's just an event to be able to have it. So yeah, I don't know. Maybe you know why grocery stores don't tend to sell lamb. Do you have any idea why?
I think a lot of rural America has never tried it. Mm-hmm. Or if they're older and they like when we started raising sheep, so many people in this area, their only experience was like during World War II when there was a shortage of beef and people ate old meat. So you know, rams and old ewes. So it was tough and it had a strong flavor.
Yeah.
And so they haven't given it a try.
Mm-hmm. I've never had a sheep. I've had lamb. I've eaten lamb.
Mutton.
Yeah, mutton.
Yeah.
Any sheep that is not a baby and you're going to eat it is mutton.
Right.
Okay. So, yeah, I could see why that is. It's really frustrating because I am not a big beef fan, but I really like lamb.
Yeah.
So go fig. The one thing I do like, I can't get hold of, but I can get a steak at any grocery store anywhere in America.
Right.
So it's fine. I will end up finding someone who's selling lamb, not this fall, but probably next, and we'll buy one and we'll do the butchering because it's just easier because we know the cuts we want. And
right.
Butchering a lamb is not a whole lot different than butchering a deer during deer season.
Right.
So we know how to do it. But
it is a problem to take a lamb to a butcher who doesn't know how to properly cut the lamb. So, you know, I don't feel like the butchers in our area are very good at it. They don't, you know, they are used to beef and they don't really, they're not good at it.
Are they just
even
not,
when we, go ahead.
Are they just not experienced with it maybe?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. But
okay,
things might change.
Who knows? The world has changed so much in the last 10 years, let alone the last 50. Who knows what's going to happen next?
Right.
Okay. So what else can I ask you? I don't even know what to ask you because...
Well, do you want me to tell you about other events that we're planning to have?
Yes. You're having more?
Yeah, so we do a birding event, which, as far as I know, nobody else in this country does. They do it in Europe, and it's called the Dawn Chorus.
Okay.
And so you gather together before dawn, and then you listen for the first song. And this is in, you know, during migration. So you want to do it fairly early. Well, you know, but you don't want to freeze to death. So we do it on Memorial Day weekend.
Okay.
And I mean, we're already noticing. It's just late March. We're already noticing the dramatic increase in the number of bird species that are singing as spring is arriving slowly. We had a very hard frost this morning, so it's not really here yet. But anyway, in May, the number of bird species is growing really rapidly. So we have an expert come from Cleveland who she's an expert on animal sounds. Birds and insects are her big thing. And so she and her partner she has this microphone. So when a bird starts to sing, she can direct it at the spot where she thinks it is. And then she can kind of isolate that sound and identify it definitely, you know, what bird it is. So then each bird is announced as another one joins the chorus. So then we record. Yeah, it's really fun.
I was going to say, that's so fun.
Yeah. So everybody's just standing around. We're moving, you know, to different areas on the farm where there are like pine trees or different clusters of trees or out in the open looking for different sounds. And everybody's walking very quietly and then listening to the sounds. So we do that from 5:30 in the morning until 7, and then I cater a big breakfast with lots of hot coffee and something warm like French toast and granola and berries. And we all sit around and talk about the birds and eat. And then we go on a hike. So 80 acres of our farm are wooded. So we hike down the hill, down around the pond, and listen to the bullfrogs and go down into the forest and get a whole nother collection of bird species. So owls and some of the rarer birds are down there. And so we usually end around 10:30 in the morning.
What a lovely way to spend a morning.
It is crazy. You know, I don't like to wake up that early in the morning, but it's so worth it when you do it. You know, it's like feeling a little painful. And then it's like, wow, we just had like a full day at 10 in the morning, uh-huh. You know, and then it's like you have the whole day in front of you, but you just feel like you get 2 days that day.
Yeah. I am an early riser. I'm usually awake, whether I'm actually up and moving, at 4 a.m. I just wake up at 4 a.m. Yeah. I don't know why.
And well,
part of it is that when we moved here, we have like a bay window. It doesn't go out away from the house, but it's the size of a big bay window in our kitchen. Mm-hmm. And it looks east. So we look out over a big old field that was alfalfa when we moved here. And last year it was corn. But it's the first time in a long time I've been actually able to get up before the sun and watch the sunrise if I choose every morning, as long as it's not cloudy, obviously.
Yeah.
And it's become part of my ritual to get my coffee and wait for the light to shift in the living room because then I know the sun is coming over the horizon.
Yeah.
And just go look every morning because it's such a beautiful thing. So you talking about this birding thing that you're doing, mm-hmm. I would absolutely do something like that because we have a lot of different birds here. And one of the birds that we didn't have was a blue jay back when we lived in the city. I rarely ever saw blue jays. Mm-hmm. And after we moved here, I heard the first jay call and I was just like, oh, finally we live somewhere where there are blue jays. Cause I grew up in Maine and blue jays love pine trees.
Yes. Yeah.
And we had pine trees all around the house that I grew up in. So every day it was just jays calling.
Yeah.
And back then I didn't care. You know, by the time I'd heard the fifth one yell, I was like, oh, be quiet. Mm-hmm. Here, I want to hear them because it's been so long since I've had them around.
Yeah.
And we have the little tiny woodpeckers. And mm-hmm. they really, really like the maple tree that is now a tall stump. So there's always bugs that they can get at. So we see the little tiny...
the downy woodpeckers.
Yeah, the little guys.
Yeah, and they're really so pretty. Cute.
And they have a really neat call too. So So I'm all about birds. I'm not a bird watcher, but bird listening is definitely my jam. I think that would be really fun.
Well, you'll have to grab your cup of coffee and head outside as soon as you can, as soon as it's warm enough.
Yeah, and I do. The first year we were here, I would go sit on the steps with my coffee and just listen to everything wake up. And back in February, we had a really warm stretch and the birds woke up. They, you know, we hadn't really heard them calling for a couple months. And when that really warm stretch of weather hit, they started fighting over places to nest. And I was like, guys, you don't want to do it yet. Yeah. Don't do it.
A little worrisome. So, yep.
Yeah. They shut up real quick when it got cold again.
Yep.
They were like, oh, maybe we shouldn't be making baby birds right now. Let's go find something else to do for a month. So, but anyway, Betsy, I'm not going to keep you because I really want to keep it to half an hour today, but, thank you so much for your time. And I wish you all the luck with your eclipse event. That sounds so fun. And I'll be dreaming of your chili.
I make a pretty mean cornbread muffin.
Yeah, I'll make some. I'll make some on April 8th in honor of your your eclipse viewing party. All right. Well, you have a fantastic day. Good luck with everything.
Thank you. Great talking to you, Mary.
You too. Thank you. Bye.
Yep. Bye-bye.